Good evening. Welcome to City of Angels Family and Recovery. My name is Bill, and I'm here with my lovely wife, Kathy.
Hi.
And two of our friends, Mike.
Hello.
And Kelly.
Hey.
And we're glad you're here to join us tonight. We've got a great show. It's called Faith and Fear. However, before we start, I'd like to say that if you'd like to reach out to Kathy and I, you can email us at Kathy with a C and Bill at cityofangelsnj.org. If you need assistance right now, you could call City of Angels at 609-910-4942. City of Angels, you could visit their webpage and Facebook page and go there and like us, Families in Recovery, as well as go there and see many of their other programs that they have for people and families of addicts and addicts themselves, all kinds of programs. I'd encourage you to check it out. You go to coaradio.com and you can listen to any of our past shows as well as many of the other shows that they have there in their past recordings. So right now what we're going to do is we're going to talk to Mike and Kelly a little bit about their history, their stories, and then we're going to talk a little bit about their experiences. Mike and Kelly have experiences working with a halfway house, I guess you would call it, mm-hmm. the type of work there and so on, and we'll look at that. And then we're going to get into faith and fear, and then we're going to talk about, in our sobriety, how we still act like addicts. Which one of you want to start tonight, Mike or Kelly?
Kelly does. She just raised her hand.
Yeah. There you go. So Kelly, start us off.
Absolutely. My name is Kelly, and I'm definitely a recovering addict.
As we all know how to use, we all know how to get high. Don't really need to talk about right. that too much.
Mm-hmm.
War stories, you know, I did it like everybody else did it, did what I had to do to get it, loved it.
One thing you shared with me, though, is you started in your 20s.
I started late. I started late. Both of my parents had passed away. I had to, you know, think people were junkies, you know, that sat on the corner. And, you know, first of all, the word heroin, just like you'd never, if you heard heroin, it was a dirty guy who lived in the gutter, you know, that you walked past in the street.
Yeah.
That's what we thought, you know, heroin.
Yeah.
When I started using, it was not called heroin. I did not know I was using heroin. It was called P-Funk. I am from Newark, New Jersey. It was called P-Funk. Never knew it was heroin. Started using it after, you know, my dad died first, and my mother died in her 40s, you know.
Right.
And so that's when I started using P-Funk. You know, crying.
So you started using it as a coping thing?
Absolutely.
Because you were just mad, depressed over
My mother just passed away.
So
I was very close with her.
Okay.
And you were young.
It was 23.
Mom.
They died close together.
Yeah.
How far apart?
It was within 11 months of
11
each other.
11 months of mother and father.
And you went straight to heroin.
Absolutely.
You didn't even...
No.
Hop, skip, and jump.
I would, you know, drink sometimes on the weekends or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, parties we'd have, whatever. No, I just went right to the P-Funk the same day that she had passed away. Same day. You know, just went down to the projects, didn't even know what it was, how much it cost. You know, those two guys did actually really make a lot of money off of that night. But anyway, a few weeks into it that I didn't want to do it anymore. You know, I started getting sick, thought I was getting the flu, started, you know, vomiting, all that. Went to an emergency room. My sister that I was very close with at the time was doing the same thing. We went to the emergency room, both of us. We were in beds right next to each other. Come to find out, the doctor came in and, you know, he said, you stop putting that stuff in your body and you'll be fine. And we were, what are you talking about? And he said, heroin. And that's the first time I found out I was doing heroin.
Wow. So you're going through withdrawals.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I told the doctor he's a liar. He didn't know I was no junkie. I was no whatever.
Wow.
So then we leave the hospital to go get some of the P-Funk,
because
we knew that would make us better.
Now you knew why you were sick.
Yeah.
And that's what I had to do, so that's what we did. First time I really stopped for any length of time, I stopped because a judge told me I had to go to prison, so I wasn't going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
So I stopped for 2 years. I went to...
So right away, early in your using, you ended up going to prison.
I'm going to tell you, it was 5 years in. You know, I would get caught shoplifting or something stupid, but eventually everything came together. And, you know, I said, this time, you're not learning, kid. We're saving...
Wow.
You don't know it now, he said, but I'm saving your life.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, so did 2 years in Clinton Women's Prison in New Jersey. Did 2 years there, got out. My sister that I was close with, we had lost contact when I went to prison.
Mm-hmm.
She contacted me, found me online, found out I was in prison, wrote me a letter. She had gone to this place, Last Chance Recovery, in Trenton, New Jersey. You know, when I got out, she wanted me to go there. She sent me pictures. She sent me pictures of her standing in front of a beautiful car, jewelry on, everything. I said, oh, I'm going to go to that place. It looks good. Yeah. Get a couple dollars in my pocket, and then I'm going to go back to Newark, New Jersey, where I'm from.
So I got to start using again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Funny. But,
my brother and sister came. They picked me up, brought me to Trenton. That was the first time, 2000, I got sober. Somehow, you know, through going to meetings at Last Chance Recovery, I was in the halfway house. I met the founder, Lee Gallagher, of Last Chance Recovery. He gave me a job at his auto finance company. And I was very good with numbers. Wow. That was my thing. I was. Yep. He gave me a job. I got a job. He gave me a house, a mortgage.
Wow.
Okay, a three-bedroom beautiful house in Trenton, but financed a car for me.
Yep.
I got married.
Yep.
I had a house. I had a beautiful job. I had a
and
car
you were clean
financed.
And sober.
Clean and sober.
Wow. Climbed up the ladder.
Right up the ladder.
Well,
right.
God just prospered you right off.
Absolutely. Huh? The house, the car, the job, everything. Got married, got pregnant at 32, had my first child. Living good in my beautiful house.
Yeah.
Put my son in daycare at 2 months old, went back to work.
Yep.
Like everything was going great.
Sure.
My husband left. My son was 11 months old. Mm-hmm. Now I had a house and a financed car and a baby and this huge house.
Devastating.
But I stayed sober.
Okay.
You did.
Because I had all the people in the rooms
surrounded
me. That's very good.
I had all my friends. I had all I had everybody around me.
That's important.
I was still very involved, you know, whatever. Again, working for the founder of Last Chance Recovery, just at his finance company instead of. I was sober 2 years in prison and then 5 years when I came out. So a total of 7 years without a drink or a drug in my body. I met somebody who was 90 days sober, fresh out of Last Chance Recovery. And he moved in with me.
Boom.
And he was 10 years younger than me. And he was still using. And I didn't know. And I found out he was using in and out of detox. It was the same story.
What was his nickname?
90 Day King.
No.
Just found out.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't beat him, join him.
Is that
so
what
that's what
that's what happened.
It broke you down, right?
Yeah, so, I was, at this point, I was 7 years sober. And I started to use. I lost
now
everything. Lost
the
house.
Did you use him? Did you use to, like, to keep him?
No, not to keep him, because I was bringing him to rehab every holiday, every birthday, every he was in detox constantly. And I, you know, I went through it for a year and a half, and I was just finally like, but I was so in love with him. You know what I mean? I wasn't gonna leave him.
There it is.
You know
there
what I mean? I was so in love with him. I didn't want to be alone. My son, this house, the job, the everything. And I'm going to tell you, it only took 6 months for me to lose the job, the house, the car, everything.
Lost all that.
Lost it all. My son had to go with his father in Michigan.
When I think of these stories, and you're not the only one, I've heard these so many stories, is that in our neediness to be loved, we compromise.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is.
Absolutely.
Because I can't trust that somebody else would come along who's healthier, better for me. You know what I tell people? Kathy's not my first girlfriend.
Right.
I did not marry my first girlfriend. I didn't marry my second. I didn't marry my third.
Right.
You know what?
I married my fourth. But people say, but I love this one so much. I'm thinking, you chose to give your heart to that individual. That's what love's about. I choose to become vulnerable, intimate. I give you my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that to this person over here also.
Right.
You know, but a lot of young girls thinking, you know, it's almost like superstition. Like, you know, this is meant to be. God has put it together.
It's fate.
And it's fate.
Yeah, yeah,
and this is the one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it ain't the one if they're going to drag you down into drugs. And you know, it ain't the one.
And let me just tell you something. Mm-hmm. Throughout this period, I had all my friends and my boss, founder of Last Chance Recovery, telling me to get away from him.
Yes.
I had to leave him. He was no good. He'll bring me down before you bring him up.
Yeah. So they're all telling you logic.
So what did I do? Mm-hmm. I stayed away from them.
Oh, of course.
Because that started to annoy you.
Absolutely.
See, that's a very good lesson, too.
They start, all my friends in AA were telling me I had to leave him.
So there's really nothing else they could have done.
No, because now...
Because they might have spoken truth, but there's still nothing to do because your heart was saying, but I love this person.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
See, that bothers me because what it says is there's no answer or solution.
Right.
It's like, all right, no, because love wins out over logic or anything else. So,
right.
So all of our listeners out there, it's like, don't fall in love is my recommendation. No,
yeah. Well, not with the 90-Day King anyway.
Not 90-Day King, correct.
But again, my boss took my job thinking that was going to teach me. He tried everything, and I didn't want to hear it. I fell with him.
Right.
So then what?
I went over to Pennsylvania. I said, I'll get sober over there.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, went over to Pennsylvania. Got sober 4 years.
Four years.
Wow. Had another child.
Yeah.
With the 90-Day King. He got sober again, too. But got an apartment. Became an accountant at big food chain over in Pennsylvania. Store accountant. From being a junkie to a store accountant.
Yeah.
Amazing job. Beautiful apartment. Out of the recovery house.
Again.
Then into sober house.
Yep.
You know, but I was in Pennsylvania. I went to a different state, so this time it was going to work, right?
Gotcha.
That's what I did. Went over there. Everything was going great. Mm-hmm. House, job. I was just going to do it one time.
Because
I had two kids, and I was really tired. And I figured if I just did it once, it'd give me a little bit of energy, and I could take them to the park like I was supposed to. And, you know, I was just getting really tired. You know, 4.5 years in. Did it just once, and well, that once wasn't just that once.
Because you can't do it just once.
Okay, we're going to have to leave that there. Thank you for sharing.
What is it? Wash and rerun?
Rinse, wash, repeat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rinse, wash, repeat. Yeah. Two more years, yeah. Just, and again, same again, thing. Yeah. Things are going good when I relapse. Yeah.
And what I hear is like, just, I don't know what to say without offending you. It's like, what a stupid choice.
I know.
I feel tired. Well, there's other answers to feeling tired. You know what I'm saying?
But I was so tired from living my life. I wasn't going to too many meetings anymore. Right. And I wasn't talking to my sponsor anymore. Again, that's what I do. Because my life becomes important. My job, my house, my car, my kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then all of a sudden I'm backing off from AA and I'm backing off from my meetings and my, and that's what happens every single time. I backed away from AA, my friends,
such the people that love me. That's what I did.
I've been sober for 35 and it's very important to go to AA, but I don't go to AA anymore.
Right.
I've moved on.
But some people need it.
But I understand some people need it. Because I know we had this conversation about, I get stuck being called an addict and going to the programs and being put myself down by saying I'm an addict. And I can't see a life away from there. But then you did see a life away from there.
But I have to say something, too, Bill. I'm sorry to interrupt you. When I'm in AA was the only time that I was in touch with God.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the only way, because I wasn't going to church anymore. I was hiding from him because I was using. Yeah. But when I went into the rooms, I was spiritual. I had a God in my life. Yeah. I had God running my life.
Okay.
I walked behind
God. So
that
was your church.
Absolutely.
That was your church.
That was what I was saying.
So
I walked behind God.
You need a community of people, whether it's the program or somebody. You need a community of people that help you.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I agree.
All right, we got to go on to Mike. Good stuff.
Right.
Mike, you're up.
All right. My name is Mike.
You're not the 90-Day King.
I am not the 90-Day King.
Good, we don't have to blame you for her.
I'm not. I'm not that 90-Day King.
You're the 92-Day. No.
Yeah.
I'm only kidding. Mike, tell us a little bit about your life.
Tell us about you.
I want to just say this off of what Kelly said, and this is really important, and I'm only saying it now in case I forget later.
Right.
Love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is a slippery slope.
Very good.
When you're an addict or an alcoholic. And I think it's because
a
lot of us are codependent and don't realize it.
Needy.
We think we're in love.
Needy.
I think we think we're in love.
Yeah.
As soon as we feel something, because a lot of us are broken. And
I'm looking for affirmation. I'm looking for somebody to love me.
Yes.
Can anybody? Because look at, I see all my shortcomings.
Yeah.
I see all my failures. Can anybody love me? Yeah. I have to stop hanging around with the healthier people because it only exacerbates my feelings about myself being unhealthy and not good. Because look at how good they are. So I got to walk away from that.
Yeah.
So who over here can love me?
Right.
Another addict.
Another one. Yeah.
And now you're feeding into each other.
And you'll hear them. You know, I've heard. Conversations between two addicts. I've been in the conversation before where, like, they'll refuse to hang up the phone unless they both say "I love you" every time because you have to be told.
You have to be told. There's a whole bunch there. Like that could be a whole nother.
It's a whole nother thing.
Finding love.
I will just say, Yeah. If you're young, or anybody, you're going into a detox or rehab, and family members, watch out. Rehab romance. Mm-hmm. It's a 100% it fails. Yeah. And if you're in it and you're coming out, you guys aren't in love. Trust me. I've tried it. I've gone out the window of a rehab before. Yeah. So my name's Mike. Anyway, I'm 37 years old. I was born in Toms River, New Jersey, suburbs. I'm very different from Kelly, who was from Newark. In the suburbs, I lived about a couple of miles from the Seaside Bridge. Normal home. My father was a teacher, a graphic arts teacher. My mom was a stay-at-home mom with various secretary jobs sprinkled in here and there when she would get bored. You know,
siblings?
I have a younger sister also. And like I said, we're very, you know, I guess a normal middle class, you know, your average American family. You know, my father did, as I realize now, had a drinking problem. When I think about my past, I do recollect my mother saying to my father a lot, you know, another one, Joe, you have another one, you have another one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really mean anything to me until I became a teenager and I really started to notice it. But, you know, my parents sent me to Catholic school. I got bounced in and out, and I think a lot of my problems started around fourth grade. Mm-hmm. I was going to Catholic school my whole life, and my parents ran out of money. It was costing a lot of money, and they got screwed on a house, and they declared bankruptcy, and my mom had a nervous breakdown. And it was a big change, big flip in my family. They took me out of Catholic school, dropped me in public school. Now, this is going to sound weird, but this was the beginning of my brokenness that we're talking about.
Yes.
I don't know where it came from. I don't know if people are born with spiritual holes or what. I don't know how it works. But I left Catholic school where I had a regiment. I was in a uniform. I had gray dress pants, white button-up shirt, red tie.
That structure.
Structure.
Yeah. Structure.
And you dress like that. You went to church every day. So then I get dropped into public school. In the middle of my fourth grade year.
In fourth grade, you're how old? Second is seven, so it's about nine.
And I didn't know how to dress. I didn't know how to dress. I didn't know what was cool. I didn't know what was in style.
Yeah.
Right.
My parents wanted to tell you people that, like, I could see what was on TV and get the coolest, latest, newest things. It really wasn't like that in my house. We weren't poor.
But it wasn't a big priority. Not like today. Kids are like...
Today, it's ridiculous. Got to have a cell phone at seven. I mean,
every cultural area.
Right.
Yeah,
it's
a
change. So I went to school and I remember being very embarrassed.
Okay.
Because I was different.
Very different.
Yep. And I remember, I'll never forget this kid named Adam. He was 9 years old. He pulled me aside and he said, "Look, you're wearing your pants wrong. You got a cuff on my..." He showed me how to do this thing that he's doing in the 90s, a tight cuff on the bottom. Remember that? Somebody's laughing right after listening to that tight cuff. But I still, though, had a very hard time fitting in. Fearful all the time that I was going to get beat up. I was going to get picked on, and I was a few times, and I was very unhappy, like very unhappy kid. I had a lot of arguments in my head. I had a lot of fights in my head. Everything was in my head. Everything was inside. Nothing ever came out, though. I fought all of you all the time. I beat you up all of the time. In my head, I was so afraid to ever do anything right out. Always in. Everything inside. I start failing miserably fourth grade. F's. And I was A-B-A-B there, so my parents make it a sacrifice, and they pluck me out of fourth grade again. I didn't finish that year, put me back in Catholic. Now I'm embarrassed because I left and I'm there, and I feel like this was a really weird thing. I finished the year in Catholic school. Fifth grade, my mom tells me over the summer, "We can't do it anymore. Got to go back to Catholic school." So now that, a public school. Now I'm a public school, fifth grade again.
Ten years old.
Right. Same kid, same school. It's embarrassing for a kid that age to be, you know, just around. I don't blame anybody, though.
Right, it's money.
I don't blame them.
No, they made the best decision they could.
They did what they could. So to speed this up, what became very important to me is I was not going to be in my head anymore. I'm going to let this out. I see where I need to be. I see the kids that are not getting picked on and the ones that are, and I don't want to get picked on anymore. So I started to be that kid that you could ask to do something. Hey, you know, ask Mike, he'll do it. And I would do it like crazy,
beat
you know,
people
beat up people. Hey, Mike, go hit Edward. he's in his locker. And I would walk up behind Edward while he's in his locker and punch him in the back of the head for no reason. And hurt this poor kid, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was cool. Like, late next period, the pretty girl from down the street, Antoinette, said, "Hey, I heard you... You know, heard you beat up Ed. Oh, that was cool. Yeah. That's cool." So I'm on the right track.
Yep.
And that is the track I took.
Basically, a bully.
A bully. That's the track because that was their friend.
And it
was
getting the public acceptance.
Attention, yeah. Acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was, and that was the way I went.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was the way to go to do your homework and do that, or was the sports, or was this way.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't using yet. Right. I started smoking though at the same time, and I was fighting and started drinking. And the first time I got drunk, I think I was probably about 16. And I'll never forget it because they told me to take it easy. I was with some older kids. They got me like a six-pack. I drank these six beers. Mm-hmm. And I was so mad that that was it. I said, "That's it? I wanted more so bad right now."
Yeah.
I knew there was something wrong right away, you know? So I continued to drink, to smoke weed, caused a lot of problems in my family, caused a lot of mental damage to my sister because I took all the attention. All of it, and she started to have her own problems with eating disorders and stuff like that. It all an addict can make a family very sick.
Oh yeah,
and I made everybody sick. Yeah. I'm gonna drag everybody down. Yeah. I'm gonna blame everybody. Don't you tell me what to do while you're doing that ever, Dad. You're drinking.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, it progressed to what was cool at the time in Toms River, and that was heroin. It was very big in the suburbs. My first girlfriend, who I loved, broke up with me. Right? I loved her. It devastated me. I started doing heroin. I was unable to stay sober for my entire life.
So from 16, you're 37. So 16 for 20 years, you've been up and down now using.
And I've been to about 20 detoxes. I've been to about two therapeutic communities. I've been to about two or three long-term rehabs.
So
I have tried everything.
If you go back and look at your recovery, now Kelly had a couple long-term ones, seven fours. Do you have any long-term?
Only long-term ones I had was when I was locked in somewhere.
Okay.
Either in a therapeutic community or in the detox, because when I came out, I'd be very lonely.
Yeah.
Now
you didn't. I'm trying to compare a little bit. So Kelly went, you know, 7 years, 4 years, but she had a lot of structure around her. She had a lot of people.
Right.
Did you not have structure?
Never had structure. I stayed alone.
So that's interesting for people to hear out there. So Mike didn't have structure. Didn't have networked up. So you were not able to get any long term.
Unless I was in somewhere.
So in your 20s, did you work and stuff?
I would work sporadically.
So my question is, if you could recall some of, what were some of the excuses, or, you know, you would go sober for maybe 6 months, 9 months, then what happened to you? What, can you recall any?
Yeah, I can. I will tell you this. Most of the times were because I never gave it a chance to, because like you would go to detox like three or 4 days, and Kelly can go with this. And if there's any other opiate addicts or heroin addicts out there, they know that 3 or 4 days is not enough.
Right.
You are still sick. Absolutely, 100%.
Well, it doesn't cure the mental issues that are...
No, that's a whole other
stuff, right?
That's a whole, yeah. So I never gave it a chance. The few times I did give the physical a chance and got like completely better, is when then the mind comes. Now I got that to deal with. I'm codependent. What we talked about, finding a girlfriend.
Yeah.
I even got married.
Yeah.
To try to fix it.
Wow.
When I was 30, I said I got to get married. I met a girl. I was sober. Yeah. And that usually what would happen then, I noticed, is whenever things are going good, was when I would, that's when I would relapse.
So you would relapse.
I said, wow, I built up a cash here. I got money. I got a car. Mm-hmm. I got a job. I can afford to do something now.
And then again, you think you're only going to do it once?
I think I'm going to do it once. And then,
just to celebrate.
Or that you can manage it.
Or you manage it.
I can manage it. I'm going to do it. And I just create the same mess every time.
Wow.
I put 3 years sober together.
Okay.
October 1st, 2011, I went where Kelly went. It was the last place on the list of a phone. I was at, had no answers.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my knees begging for help. I was at zero. I had done some very bad things.
Right.
Very bad things. Right. That I still need to learn how to atone for. You know. So, I met Kelly. She answered the phone. She did my intake.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Trenton. I got sober for 3 years. I sponsored a bunch of guys. I spoke at a place where they actually recorded me on CD.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was considered really spiritual.
Yes.
I was getting all this stuff that I never got in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
People were looking to
acceptance.
Me for answers like me. I was like, I hit a spiritual wall. She talked about God. AA is spiritual, which mm-hmm. I think is great. It's a great mm-hmm. jumping board, a springboard.
Yeah.
For people that have nothing, that religion scares some people away.
Right.
So you get that springboard. I never left the board.
If you were to take two of your stories, and the issue is holding sobriety, you know, 7, 4 years, months. What are some of the triggers? What are some of the suggestions, recommendations? Is there anything anybody can do? Or all you're saying is it's a chance, it's luck, it's... What is it that...
Or is relapse right. a part of your healing process?
I think that to get into the initiate help, to start, I think the person has to be out of options.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to convince an addict or an alcoholic to stop while they're mm-hmm. in it and still have options.
Well, that's why, mm-hmm. and that's why a lot of programs when you work mm-hmm. with the families addicts talks about really monitoring how you're enabling. Take away mm-hmm. some of your enabling. It doesn't mean you can't help at all.
Right.
But the point is...
If we have options...
You just said, right, if you have options.
Right, Kelly, would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
If we're left with options, if you're giving me a roof over my head and you're feeding me
yeah.
and I'm able... I'm going to stick around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I got that. I got
you give me the house
covered,
and roof, I could go out and get... I could pick up 10 bucks to get to my drugs.
I'll hustle out there somehow.
Yeah, I could hustle 10 bucks.
I got
bucks,
this place
bucks.
To come back to, and it's a hard decision, I'm sure, for family to make.
Yeah.
My father...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Told me.
Yeah.
Look, it's this mm-hmm. or this. And that was the beginning of me seeking help. At least I was.
Okay.
Because I'm hitting grounds out there. You know, it ain't yeah. easy. So that's the secret.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up there for that section. I want to go into the next section. So, Mike, we were just talking about, we have a relationship with somebody. And, you know, you may have a year sobriety. Mm-hmm. And I have 6 months sobriety. And here we start dating. Mm-hmm. And then we turn around and we say... Let's get high. What would it be like to get high together, have a good time high? Why would we want to get high?
See, for me, it was, I work in the 12 steps.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's for me, that was. I mean, there was a rule. I wasn't going to date somebody unless they worked
the
12 steps.
Yeah, but 90 Day King, you said, let's get high together.
No, after okay. that happened. Oh, well, a year and a half I had gone through him using and I didn't.
Right.
You know, and I realized I kept taking him to detox after detox.
And you got tired of war down.
And I'm saying nothing is working for him.
But what I'm thinking of more of is that Mike was mentioning earlier. You were saying, addicts in recovery shouldn't be dating.
Right.
Not early on.
Mm-hmm.
Because
there's
you end up
rules.
Using.
There's some
and,
rules.
And Mike and I were just sitting here talking about using, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. I said, so Mike, look, we're sitting here at the table right now. So I could say, Mike, want to get high? Want to do some heroin, some Asia? And I'm saying, why would I say that to you unless I'm trying to say to you, we have a relationship, Mike, right now going. Let's, like, this would what? Make it more intimate? It would make it more something like we have something that we've done together. Like, we're trying to connect. So we say, let's get high together. So that makes us have something in common. So why couldn't I say to Mike, let's go work the soup kitchen Sunday? I called you yesterday and said, Mike, let's build a buddy of mine has a motorboat and he wants to take the motor off the transom. And I said, let's build a motor holder. But no, we sit around and say, let's get high. Mm-hmm. So what are we trying to do? We're trying to connect. So we use dope to connect. Now, in your case, you were frustrated. So you were like, who gives a crap? Give me the stuff. I'm pissed.
Yeah.
That's not the same.
Yeah. And you could ask me and Kelly right mm-hmm. here, what happened to us, why did we use together?
Yes, because you two used together. You have to tell us.
We were sober. We
absolutely.
And now here's
and what'd
the thing.
You say to each other? What's your logic?
Now yeah. we met.
Now I worked at Last Chance Recovery.
She was a staff member. She had.
I'll try not to use the word stupidity or anything in this
right.
conversation.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, but see, we can't think as like an addict.
I understand. I'm having fun with that. But go ahead.
She had worked her steps.
Yep.
Had a sponsor.
Yep.
Okay, it was like a working member of AA.
Yeah, God now, was running my life
right.
at that
yeah.
time,
yeah.
not Kelly.
You know, we had years, like not mm-hmm. multiples of years, but like
yeah.
I think I was just coming up on a year and had commitments, and I was also making amends, like really working the steps. You'll see people say they worked the steps, and there's people that are working the steps.
Right,
and they're
right.
were in their life, moving in their life. And me and Kelly met. And started and made a decision and talked about decision,
right.
you know, and we talked for a long time sober.
Before.
A long time
right.
we talked
started.
Before a kiss ever
so
happened.
So you were just right. friends.
Friends for a long
for
time.
For a very long time.
And it progressed to something deeper.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
it was a very healthy relationship. We continued
mm-hmm.
to work our program. Mine was mine. Hers was hers.
Well, that's very good.
So, and this now, if you were to ask what a textbook, if you're going to date in AA, is supposed to be, that's what it was, and we had that.
Yeah.
Right. So you had some maturity.
What happened? Right. So what the hell happened? Why did me and her wind up relapsing?
Yeah. Why did you end up using together?
And my take on it, I believe. She believed that I was doing, I was at a certain point in my recovery. We would argue about it. She said that I was like so humble and had no ego. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I said, Kelly, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I feel like something's wrong. Oh. I feel like I'm getting an ego.
Right. Oh. Right.
I felt something wrong. I felt like I was doing stuff for the wrong reason.
Okay.
Interesting.
I felt an ego coming on. Like mm-hmm. I was like doing this thing. I was running this thing I started. Yeah, right, yeah this right. thing.
So look at me. Look at me. And
I was doing something kind of separate from AA's. Teaching this thing about right. like the AA book history.
Did you stop being a servant and started to be more of a leader?
Well, I think so, maybe. But and also mm-hmm. the spirituality thing. Like I was spiritual. Mm-hmm. I would talk about God. I would say mm-hmm. I'm praying to God. I would ask God to remove things for me. But I didn't really know who God was.
Very good. Right.
Or Jesus. It wasn't like that far in. It was just spirituality. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the same time that this is happening to me, Kelly gets smashed with medical problems. Her face gets paralyzed.
Right.
And it's a brain infection. She's in pain all the time. And I see her start to change and slip spiritually. I noticed her. Not the Kelly I knew. Yeah. God wasn't running her. That's my take on it. And we've moved past this point in life.
Is that how you see
yes,
it, too?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've moved past this point. This is going to flip you out. This is the moment that the relapse happened. Yeah. I'll tell you the day and the moment. She was in pain, and we were going to hospitals. We were going to doctors and saying we're addicts, because that's what we were taught to do. So they don't give us narcotics. And they're giving us non-narcotic stuff, and she's taking it, and taking it, and taking it. She's in pain, and one day, she's laying on the couch, and I walk out of my room, normal day, just like any other.
Mm-hmm.
She says, Mike, I'm in so much pain, and I need help. It hurts. And I said, well, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? And she's like, I don't know. I said, well, we have this, we have this. She goes, Mike, I need something else. And I looked at her, and I said, okay, I'll be right back.
No.
Years sober.
Yeah.
I think I was over 2 years sober.
Yeah. Never, ever did he. She was almost 2 years. Either one was using Trenton.
Got so this. So she said that, and she didn't ask me for heroin.
No. Mm-hmm.
She just made a slight implication.
Yeah.
And
you understood.
I was there, and I didn't know how close I was.
Yeah.
I had hit that wall
of
progression. I wasn't getting into where you guys have been taking us, which we're so grateful for you opening our mind to Jesus and like the real, faith. The real deal, faith. The word, the faith.
Yeah,
I don't really think I had the faith.
Yeah,
no.
And that's all it took was a slight implication of two people working the program and having a healthy relationship. So we thought, but that's how insidious this disease is. It snaked its way in, and boom.
So when you
10 minutes later, he came back.
Oh yeah,
with
I
the
never
heroin
copped.
And needles.
I imagine that I found a way. I never copped and tried in my
when
life.
When I tell I you it was 10 minutes, I exaggerate 20.
20 minutes. 20 I'm back minutes. In the house with heroin
so
and needles.
So when he came back with the heroin, you were so ill that you. Were
I said absolutely. I knew it was going to take that pain away.
And did you know he was going to go get heroin?
No. I really think because neither one of us had used in East from Tom's River. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never did I think that, but I. Thought maybe a Percocet or something, maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so did I think, I knew he was coming back for something. Did I ever think that? No way I was shocked.
Right.
So then what? Then you're hooked again, both of
you? Yeah, we immediately were off to the races and we lost everything. Mm-hmm. Our reputations and that
jobs,
we had built.
Out, jobs, everything.
We went on a full-blown run.
Mm-hmm.
We hit it as long as we could.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped right away. She blames me for getting us caught so quick because I stopped right away. I felt that I could not answer a phone call or talk to my sponsees.
Yeah.
I felt like it would be wrong.
Yes.
You're a hypocrite.
And that is the whole point.
Yeah, because
of being
I'm now
sponsor.
Using and I could not look them in the face. Mm-hmm. I was so ashamed. I just couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I couldn't do it. There was one meeting that we had to go to, and if we would have went, we probably would have got away with it a little longer, but I wouldn't go. And they all came to our house.
Yep.
Oh,
they knew.
They knew.
Mm-hmm. They knew. All of a sudden, Mike and Kelly disappeared.
Yeah,
for got you. Long.
Absolutely knew. I mean, quick.
Yeah, pretty quick. Mm-hmm. It was pretty quick.
I think a month, maybe.
They all came knocking our door.
They went full blown.
They like intervention us.
The same thing. Even my job, the now the apartment, because I'm working and paying for the apartment through right through my pay, and it's the same thing. Gone. Immediately gone. We went and got an apartment.
Well, it was bad. We got split up for a minute. We had, because we had two dogs.
Oh,
we had a boxer pit bull mix. Uh-huh. We had a little dog, and we had a life, man.
But again, we lost everything.
We lost everything.
Lost everything, everything,
including each other. Yeah. For a little bit.
In a matter, you know, of 4 days, we lost everything.
Wow.
And came out of detox. Came out of detox and went right into a hotel because we had nowhere to live.
Right.
Thank God he had just gotten
unemployment.
Back pay, $4,000 from unemployment.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So now we're sober, and we got this money just fresh out of detox.
Right.
We got the apartment on Elmer. You came, you and John came over, you know, and so I was over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were just, like, kind of teetering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we decided we were, the people next door were drug dealers and all that stuff.
Because we were on a razor's edge,
We were right on the edge. So then we moved into Nina's.
That's actually a good smart choice.
Yeah, we made a good decision.
And that's when you moved to Nina's. And we've been sober ever since.
So, so my thought was, as I'm just sitting here listening, I'm thinking, well then, again, we were faced with an event.
Yes.
We couldn't think of any other option, right? I got 4 years sobriety or 7 years, and I was tired. So I was tired, and I said, give me that. In this case, again, another, it was crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Being tired could be a crisis. I write two kids by myself.
Oh,
everything's a crisis. I'm at this place and by point, and for some reason, I say the option that only comes to my mind is this at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Isn't in this case,
isn't it?
But
and then at this time, you two came to a crisis. But it's not only them only known. It's almost like everybody in the world goes through crisis.
Right.
And you got to make
But we all fall back on the coping skills that we've been taught.
People will end up going stealing, or people will go end up overeating, or people are going to go do drugs, or people... So
addicts, we have to help them realize that when they hit their highs or lows, there are other options.
You have to have a strategy ahead of time of what you're going to believe you're going to do, and then you have to follow through with it. So if you get 2 years sobriety, now you got to think of a strategy. Cause I'm going to tell you something. Let's play this scenario. Kathy and I are going to leave your lives one day. God's going to move us on. We're going to go minister somewhere else. He may move you on. You're not going to have me in life. How are you going to do it? You're going to go back and use now again? Because that, you see what I'm saying?
Now that we have this, I told you, I can't see myself even being.
Yeah.
A part of that even being an option. Weren't we talking about that the other day?
We're talking about
I can't see myself even being that person again. I didn't know this. I didn't know this.
For those who are listening, she's pointing to the Bible.
Yeah, I am.
And spirituality, which is a basis of, of the program.
Listen, when God was running my life, I'm telling you, when I was hitting my knees and praying in the morning, and God was running my days, I wasn't thinking about it. Had I been praying that day or you know, God, please, had I been anywhere near that, I would not have even said that to him that day. Done. I was done. I was,
so we talk about spirituality then. We talk
ego. Ego took over.
Our spirituality slipped both of us. Yeah, you were
running. I was running last chance recovery.
It slipped away.
Everybody was Kelly this, Kelly that, Kelly that. You know, I was running seven houses by myself. Come on.
Right.
Men's houses too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
God's not at that point, and you know, I get hit with medical problems and all this, and it was just like,
wow.
It was like, all right, this pain, I can't not take it. I just need to go away. Just let it go away right now. I promise, please, right now. I'll get through it. I'll figure this all out.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad for her because I'm so in love with her. This is poor Kelly, the girl I look up to.
Okay, so now we have the thought that says, okay, my spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we have the addicts all coming into the AA programs and everything. What is, Kathy's favorite, what is different this time in your spirituality walk than what was before? Because your topic is faith and fear, so you had a lot of fear or something.
Mm-hmm.
What was your fear? What was going on? This is your chance to tell your topic for tonight was faith and fear, so.
I had no more faith. That's what it was. Fear was running my life. Fear of the medical problems that I was dealing with. I was no longer relying on God. I was relying on Kelly, so I was full of fear. There was no room for any kind of faith. When I had faith and I relied on God and said, look, I know that this pain is going to go away. I know it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do drugs. You have to have one or the other. You can't have both.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you can't have both. Yeah. When you're full of faith, I couldn't have, what did we call it, unwavering faith at that time? Because I didn't know God.
What you know now.
I didn't know what I know now. Yeah. I just knew spiritual, that there was something bigger than me.
But you didn't know the details.
I kind of relied on him, like my life was a little bit better. I had a car, I had a good job, I had things were better. But I didn't know who he was.
So what you're saying is, for addicts to continue in their sobriety, they need to continue that spiritual
Absolutely.
Walk.
They
need to keep knowing more and more about God.
There you go.
Your spiritual work needs to continue to mature.
Right. Once we go through the 12 steps, and I absolutely believe, like, if there was any chance, once you go through the 12 steps, I absolutely believe that nobody should fear religion. I know that that's why they don't bring up religion in AA, because people, because I don't want to hear it either. Right. I'm coming out of detox. I'm not feeling good. I don't want to hear about God.
Right.
I blame him for what happened
at
in my
that
life.
Point,
I'm not relying on him. Yeah. That's when I get out of detox.
Yes.
And I just, and I'm starting, and I don't have, I'm living in a halfway house, and I don't have two pairs of shoes.
So you
and
need
I don't
the
12
have,
you know.
Steps
then. Right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I need something that's not going to push me away.
Yeah.
You know
can't
what I
mean?
Can't
be too preachy.
No.
You can't
be. No. Right. No. So, which is exactly, you know,
what they do.
Yes. They go spiritual. But I absolutely believe that once you're done, go through the 12 steps, you change as a person. Your thinking changes.
Yes.
And that's amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing. Because you're no longer that piece of crap that did all those things. You're not that person. Those are things you did, not who you are.
Yes.
And you accept that as your past.
Yes.
Okay? But now,
you
need to know who this higher power is.
Beautiful.
You need to know who is this thing that is making my life better, that my life is better when I'm relying
on
him.
I come out, enter 12 steps, I start working my, which is, again, a lot of spiritual foundation to it.
Very much
When you're
so.
Done with the 12 steps, you're going to continue in a spiritual growth that you need to. So if you're Jewish, you're going to go to your temple and talk to your rabbi. You're Christian, you're going to study your Bible, Jesus Christ. If you're Muslim, you're going to study your Quran or whatever. You know, and
you have to continue to get to know the God of your understanding more fuller.
Because then they said,
and
well,
keep growing in him.
Because then if I don't, then you kind of backslide. And for just a side note, a lot of people, there's a lot of sickness in the world, a lot of sin, we call it, in the world, and that includes being in the church. So our relationships to spirituality have negative connotations around it, just like anything else. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So people are negative. They watch evangelists on TV and say, oh, they're only out for money.
Right.
You see? And that may be true for some, but the point is, we throw the baby out the bathwater. We decide not to continue, maybe needing to go back and do some more work in our spiritual work.
Right.
Go back to church, but find one that works for you. Go back to temple, find one that works for you. Grow in your maturity in God. There was, like you two were saying, it was like, well, our spirituality only went so far and there was no substance to it.
No.
It wasn't enough to push it over top and say, oh, now I understand what's going on in this world. I understand where God's at. I understand what's happening around me.
Absolutely. So, and that's, and again, that's what I'm saying. When we learn where, like, who we are now, as far as, since you guys have come into our life and the place that we're at now, you have so much faith that it's hard to have fear. And when you have fear... You know what to do with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You do. You know what to do with it.
It's
because
beautiful.
You know it's going to be okay. Yeah. You just have that one fleeting moment of fear. You don't get stuck in it. It doesn't paralyze you.
It's beautiful.
And the other way around,
I think
the
one
fear
of the,
paralyzes you.
One of the very first verses I ever read to Kelly was Jeremiah 29:11, where I read to her that God says, I know my thoughts towards you, and they are of peace and of hope and of a known end, that you will understand and know what's happening toward the end of all things. That changes us. And the other thought I really shared with Mike and Kelly was that, you know, a lot of times in our work for sobriety, the 12 steps, a great program, we go there and say, my name is Bill, I'm an addict. And I stay there. Every meeting for 25 years, I'm Bill and I'm an addict. I'm Bill and I'm an addict. And one of the biggest challenges, some of the things I like to see is now I hear people start saying I'm a recovering addict.
Correct.
So that's a little bit positive, move me away from this negativeness about an addict is a negative statement, I'm sorry to say. And so One of the things I really through Mike and Kelly was the vision is to move away from being an addict. I am a child of God.
There you go.
And a child of God trumps my addict. My addict is my past. It is who what I did and maybe who I was back then. But aren't we supposed to be recovering from that? That means I'm moving away from that. I am not an addict. I'm moving away from being an addict. I'm moving toward being a child of God. I don't always have to label myself in this darkness, in this crap of where I was as an addict in a negative sense.
Absolutely.
I've been 35 years sobriety. I will say I'm an addict if I go to meetings just so that they could connect with me.
Right. Absolutely.
My name's Bill. I'm an addict so that you understand. I know where you're coming from. You know where I'm coming from.
Absolutely.
I do not walk around my daily life today. I don't go to church or walk in my church and say, hey, I'm Bill. I'm an addict. I don't walk around. Everybody I see say I'm an addict. I don't need to. I'm a child of God is a lot more powerful than I'm an addict.
Absolutely.
Now, don't get me wrong. Please don't take it a negative. I believe in the 12 steps and working that program.
Absolutely.
I just want to say we've covered addiction is such a huge, and alcoholism. It's both the same thing. All the same.
Right.
Food, whatever it is. Yep. It's all the same. It's such a long journey. We've hit some advanced points here when we talk about like religion, because it is very, like Kelly said, when you come in, the last thing I want is the guy with the car and the job and the nice clothes telling me how good things are,
because
you got a car, a job, and clothes. I don't want to hear it.
Right.
Okay,
that's how you're coming in.
So how do you want to? What do you think they want to hear?
Just talk to me like we're. You know, you don't want to sell me anything.
No.
Just say what's up, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe you got to let the person see them a few times. I've always said the best thing to do is a handshake. You see a new guy, you go up and shake his hand. Mm-hmm. When you see the guy again, you shake his hand again. And I used to tell the guys that I sponsored, I said, go in and just shake the guy's hands. Don't say
hi. You know,
matter
of fact, then maybe it's like let the addict take the lead.
Kind of.
Because I'm thinking about, you know, in our church setting, it's the same thing in our church setting. Sometimes our members are so energetic, they want to tell people about everything they've learned, and it's coming across like I'm telling you what you need to do.
Right.
And the same thing here, you go to an AA meeting or whatever, and somebody's maybe excited about them making progress in their life. But it's coming across about, let me tell you.
It's a little more dangerous in that atmosphere.
Maybe what you're saying is, what about if you just be my friend? You don't have to give me any input right now. Just be my friend, let me know you care.
Yeah.
And then see what comes out of it as it progresses on its own.
And let the fog wear off on the addict. You know, and again, you might get the guys that have been around a million times that are in and out and that aren't serious.
Right.
You just don't know. All you could do is be there, put your hand out, and I would hopefully the guy maybe has a sponsor or he has somebody in his life that's telling him the correct thing and not the wrong thing.
Well, see, that's another thing. See, that makes me think trust is earned.
Right.
Trust is earned.
Right.
So who would you come into my life and tell me what to do with my life?
Right.
You know, why don't you just come into my life and be my friend first and get to know me
Let's
first
do that.
And earn my relationship so that I can open up and be vulnerable or, you know, that I need to be and to be honest.
Like I said, I would make guys promise me. I said, just go, when you know, every meeting you go to, shake the same guy's hands, like three or four guys.
Yeah.
Just because eventually I guarantee you they're going to start saying, oh, hey, Bill.
Right.
Hey, what's going on?
Now you're connected.
And it slowly happens.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning. And then there's that road of the steps. And we finally are ready to take that journey that Kelly was talking about that's going to really, I can promise you, as a chronic relapser who did achieve 3 years sober, that I were a good 3 years. I was very happy. Don't get it wrong because I relapsed that it was bad.
Okay.
All right. I had 3 years sober. I planted a seed. I'm a different person today because of those 3 years.
That's correct.
And because I went through the steps. See, I worked the program. Yeah. I worked all the steps as they are outlined in the book. And I was lucky enough to have a sponsor who was not twisting it. And he told me how it was. And when you get a sponsor, if you're new, that's like a job interview. When you're going to ask somebody to be your sponsor, ask them if they've been through the steps
in
the book.
Ask them that.
Because you want a guy that has worked the steps.
Absolutely.
You're interviewing them for the job, really.
Yeah.
Take it seriously, you know.
I want to ask you, because we've talked about complacency. Could you talk about that in your experience and what you mean you know, by how you get complacent and why that's a troubling spot for you?
I can. Complacency is what happens when we get up to the 12th step and we become what is called two-stepping.
Okay.
Two-stepping is when we've gone through the steps and we don't listen to what the last three steps tell us.
Yes.
Which are our maintenance steps. We're supposed to live in those three.
Yes.
And one of those three tells us specifically to go out and search other books and other knowledge and further.
Continue and our understanding.
Further our spiritual. And I can tell you that is one of the most unfollowed steps. Because a lot of people don't know what to do. Even if I'm talking guys with 30 years sober. Mm-hmm. Some guys.
Yeah,
They're still sober. Some don't even live right. You don't really know people.
But they're not putting more information in their
life. One of those steps is so overlooked that it tells me to go. I don't need to stay on that AA book.
Yep.
Go away.
Yep.
Go find, go further it.
Yeah.
Because we've come as far. But live in those three steps.
Of course.
If I'm living in those three, if I don't, I get trapped in the two-stepping.
Very good.
Which is the first step.
And the last.
And the last step.
Very good.
So every day I'm admitting I'm powerless. I'm an addict. I'm like, I'm an addict.
Yeah. I'm stuck there.
And I'm in the 12th step. I'm sponsoring guys. I'm making sure I'm following it. And I'm doing commitments.
But there's
a lot of things I'm missing.
You're not growing.
And that's what happened. And that's why they say the second year in sobriety is the hardest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's when I fell. No. Oh, my God. Three years.
3 years.
Yeah. 3 years. Still, but still. Yeah.
You came to a place where
I was two-stepping.
Yeah.
And then in the gap
momentum.
Lose momentum,
yeah.
And there's a large gap now the ego started to come in. And what you guys have given me is what the 11th step tells me to do, and is to learn.
Yeah.
And I feel different today.
Yeah.
Today is different. Yeah. Then you like to ask that, what is different today? Today is different is because I've been told something. I have proof.
Yeah.
I've been given this book, other book,
right,
and I've learned some amazing things, some proof.
Yeah, substance,
proof, and
faith. I know what that thing is now.
Yeah, you know what's going on.
That's beautiful.
You know what's happening. You know what's going on. Because again, many people don't do further spiritual work, so they don't look to other books like the Bible or other books.
They stay on that book forever.
And so they don't go to the next level, let's say.
Right. Yep.
And,
so you have to keep growing.
You have to.
You have to keep learning and growing in order to continue to advance your sobriety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to go back real quick with your fear and faith, because this show's about. And so, Kelly, as you were explaining, is we go through life again without a full knowledge and understanding of life. So then that allows fear to crop up. For the family of codependents, they have great fear that their addict is going to die. Legitimate concern.
Absolutely.
But the fear drives them to do crazy things.
Oh, yeah.
Like give them money. The fear drives them to chase them all around at all hours of the night. The fear drives them to make unhealthy choices because of their fear. The addict with the fear of life, the fear of dying, the fear of things going on. Then when we during our steps and everything, we begin to grow spiritually. And what you're saying is now you've even found like the next level, like Mike just was saying, you built off and came off the 12 steps and you're saying, now I've picked up another book. And in our case, because we're Christians, we picked up the Bible.
Yeah.
Right.
And we began to actually read it, which, you know, we never really understood in the past or really didn't put a lot of reading into it. We began to read it and we're beginning to understand about spirituality, what's going on in the world, why is it happening? You know, why is death? What's going on? And we're getting these answers to questions we have, which starts to take away the fear.
Absolutely.
Because now I understand that there is a plan. There is something going on. God is here. He understands what's happening. We're understanding.
I know what faith is.
We know what faith is. Believe in his word that he's going to do what he's going to do.
Absolutely. I know what faith really is.
And you know what that fear, the faith versus fear thing? You want to know what's weird about my fear that came in?
What?
My fear came in that after 3 years sober, that ego started to come in. I said, wow. I started to get scared that I really am a scumbag.
Yeah.
I said, this is coming back. I got 3 years sober. This isn't supposed to be here. And I started getting scared that I was really like that one they talk about in the book. What is it? one
in the big book.
Yeah, they talk about. I thought I was like that one that can't understand.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I can't get it.
I said that to me like three years sober, and I'm breaking. Like ego's coming back, and I can't stand. Well, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And that started to break me down, and I started to lose a lot of my faith.
Yeah,
a lot of my faith.
Fear comes back,
which is why when she
immediately
it was like. Two asteroids hit at the same time. Uh-huh. She's medical problems, and I'm questioning everything, and she just asked me that, and boom, click.
Well, and when I'm thinking about faith now, Kel, I'm thinking about, well, we know God says I have your best interest in mind. I know my thoughts towards you. And then he educates us and says, now, here's what's going on. Mm-hmm. So you understand that there is an enemy out there. He wants to destroy you. Mm-hmm. I will help you in this way, this way, this way. And I begin to understand that. Mm-hmm. Then my faith grows because I understand that bad things even happen to good people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Bad things happen to bad people. Bad things happen to good people. But God's with the good people through those hard times. And he gets them through them. Mm-hmm. And they still happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I think about is that God turns around and says, I'll be with you through it all. My faith comes to a place where I do not need the miraculous to happen to strengthen my faith. See, when I'm a babe in Christ, I'd like to see the hand of God work in my life. And you have.
Mm-hmm.
See, both of you have. You say, absolutely. Wow, I believe God has come and opened my eyes. He's taken care of us this way, that way, this way. He's opened our eyes with knowledge and wisdom. And so you see the hand of God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I grow and mature, I turn around and say, well, if my car breaks down, I no longer have to say, wow, where is God? He doesn't love me anymore.
Yeah, right.
What's happening to me? You see what I'm saying? Because now I have knowledge of what's going on in the world.
Right.
I know bad things are going to happen. My car breaks down. I'm not screaming. And I'll tell you, there's people screaming, raving, raving when the car breaks down. And God, why are you letting this happen to me? Now we understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just, and so we have more peace.
Because exactly I understand. It. We're no longer yelling, why is this happening to me?
Right.
But it's not happening to me. You know why. My car broke down. It needs to be fixed.
Right. So the last thought before I pass over to Kathy is, therefore, work your 12 steps, work them thoroughly, and then do, like Mike says, with the last three steps is to continue on in your spiritual growth. Go back to your temple, synagogue, come out to church, look for a good
Further
church, find
knowledge.
Somebody who's spiritual
Further
minded, mature, grow enough that they could take you and go deeper to understand
absolutely
what the purpose of life is and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, Mike, any closing thoughts that you want to say to our listeners?
Absolutely. Especially, you know, addicts, you know, people in recovery, whatever, you know, further your knowledge. You know, further your knowledge.
Okay.
You know, once you have, like I said, you know, we live our lives most of the time paralyzed in fear, constant fear.
Very good.
Financial fear, insecurities, like just paralyzed in fear. Mm-hmm. Once you further your knowledge, you live in peace, faith.
Wow. Yeah.
In peace.
Faith and peace,
That's
faith
awesome.
And peace are, you know, fear
they go
paralyzed,
hand in hand.
Right? You know,
absolutely.
And it's so much nicer. To have faith and feel peace.
Yeah, because you know that makes me think of some people say, yeah, I believe in God, but they're still in this chaotic unpeace. The families of the addicts, they're in turmoil because they haven't really let go and trust God that
absolutely.
He's going to work it out either way. Yes, you're
God trying. God has a plan. He knows the plan already. He knows the plan already. It's not, we're not going to change it. You know what I mean?
We're
not going to
change,
change it. You know, and we know somebody in our family that ran around chasing the addict and, you know, giving the money. And unfortunately, you know, he finally found the peace that he was always so desperately searching for.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that. You know, but I mean, her life was absolutely chaotic.
Yes,
you know,
it was,
she was trying to him, trying to save him. We cannot save people.
No.
We cannot
God's
save
him. God's going to have
he
to do
can't.
That.
We can't.
And Mike, any words of wisdom in closing?
I want to say something to the families of addicts because I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
From being on the other side, watch what you're doing. When you think you're helping, you might not be helping.
Yeah.
Because the more options that we went over before, and just reiterate the options, and when an addict has an option, he's going to take it, and he's going to run with it.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you got to remember that, what you just said, and How are they playing with their emotions up and down, skyrocketing up and down for their own addiction? And then how is that affecting the addict and the family life and everything else? Because you're acting out.
Right.
Yep.
Take a look at the chaos around you.
Yeah.
You
right. Know? Yeah. Kath, any thoughts you have in
closing? I just think it's really all a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, Kath.
And we really appreciate you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys. We appreciate
you guys, too.
Yeah, we do. We appreciate you guys.
Good stuff. God bless you. Continue
for
your
being
recovery.
To help
and yeah, be willing to help others. And maybe we'll have you back on sometime down the road and we'll see where you're at then.
There you go.
Here's the higher learning.
The higher learning.
Absolutely.
All right. Everybody out here, you have a good night. We'll see you next month.